The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News Talk.
Now, new data from the Health Research Board shows a noticeable surge in cocaine use among younger people in this country. To get a handle on the impact consistent cocaine use can have on a person, I'm joined by two people, the head of addiction services at St. John of God Hospital and clinical professor of psychiatry at UCD, Colin O'Gara. And we're also joined by a recovering cocaine addict, Connor Harris. Connor and Colin, good morning. Connor, we'll start with you. Good morning to you.
Morning, how are you?
I'm good. Now, what age were you and in what circumstances when you first took cocaine?
Yeah, so I first took it when I was 17. I was, growing up, I played football and I was really big into the gym and stuff like that. So I was never interested in drugs or anything. I always thought I'd never take it, but I ended up going into graduation.
I'll tell you what, Connor, that line is really atrocious. We'll come back to you in a moment if we can sort out that line, because I really want people to hear your story properly. But I'll talk to Colin O'Gara, who's listening. Colin?
Good morning, Pat.
Do you find these statistics from the Health Research Board surprising or not?
Not surprising at all, Pat. I think all of the indicators from a clinical perspective show that cocaine has been on the rise. I would say it's probably since 2016. If you see an improvement in the economy, Pat, you generally see more cocaine, more people taking cocaine. So prior to 2016, from the Celtic Tiger up to 2016, we saw a decrease in cocaine intake clinically, and that was because people were using cheaper forms of stimulant like methadrone and methadrone, which were sold in the head shops, if you remember at the time. Mm-hmm. There was a loophole where they could be sold, and eventually the government closed that loophole. But since 2016, as people had more money in their pockets, you saw an increase in cocaine. What people were telling us is just that huge availability of cocaine and sadly the normalization of the drug. So in younger people, say early 20s now, you have a phenomenon of people coming into us saying that they feel out of place if they're not taking cocaine in a group. And that is alarming. I struggle to think that that's the case across the board. But when you combine it with other reports such as, cross sporting spectrums and other, rural areas, urban areas, it seems like cocaine, there isn't any place that cocaine has been. And if you look at, swabs taken inside in town in various places, or if you do that, banknotes and whatever, cocaine just seems to be extremely common. And certainly, working on the front line like we are at the moment in terms of providing services for people with drug problems, cocaine always fares, and it always fares with alcohol.
Now, I'll come back to you then, Colin, to talk about, what the medical difficulties are with this so-called recreational drug. But I believe we've improved the line to Connor. So, Connor, you were saying at the age of 17, you can take us back to the beginning.
Yeah, so Pat, at the age of 17, when I first took it, I had no intentions of taking it, if that makes sense. I used to be big into the gym and big into football, which I am again now, thank God. But I was just out one night at a graduation and it got offered to me. And, just out of pure curiosity, I tried it. And, trying it, when I tried it, I knew straight away. It was like I fell in love with it. It was like a relationship I formed with it straight away. And that night, I knew when I took it that it had an effect on me that looked like no other substance or no woman, no gym, no football had ever made me feel. And I took it that night and I had a feeling that it was going to be bad, but I just went with emotions anyway. And I just went from using maybe on the weekends, from using on a Friday night to Friday, Saturday night to Friday, Sunday night. And within the space of 2 years, I turned 19 and I was already in a treatment centre after nearly losing everything because of drugs.
Now, when you were doing your leaving cert, were you using cocaine regularly?
Yeah, so by the time my leaving cert came around, I actually used during my leaving cert. By that time, I had been sneaking out of my house during the weeks to go to college parties and stuff like that, because the college local to me would have, I would have known a lot of people from dabbling in drugs around there, and I would have been going into school hungover, going into my leaving cert, then sitting my maths exam completely out of my head, no real recollection of what went on during my maths exam, not really any remembrance, but just remembering being there and being out of my head and asking myself, how did I get here and why was I doing it? But I had no control over it anymore.
Now, when you went on your Leaving Cert holiday, you were in Croatia. Were you able to obtain cocaine over there? Were you using while you were on that holiday?
Yeah, so that was the holiday for me. Like, to talk about it in the program, there's, I crossed the imaginary line, I believe, when I was on that holiday. So that's when my using got really bad, because I was obviously on my own and there was no family around and I didn't have to hide that anymore. I went over for 10 days and I used for them 10 days. And I was constantly lying to my family when I was over there, saying I need money for a taxi, I need money for this, because I just spent all my money on cocaine over there. And I didn't sleep for 5 days and I went through bad psychotic events and stuff like that. And it was honestly horrible. It was meant to be the holiday that you're meant to remember. And, you know, for me, I don't really want to remember any of it, because I think it was the big stepping stone and what was going to make or break me. And it did break me.
Now, when you were at home and you were actually using cocaine over that period before your Leaving Cert, how were you funding your habit?
So when I first started taking drugs, I wouldn't have been dabbling in big amounts. But when I seen the people, how many people, when I actually came and got introduced to the environment and how many people were actually dabbling in cocaine, I seen it as a chance. If I just get a big bit in and sell something to someone else, I won't have to pay for what's mine. And that's how it all went at the start. But that only lasted for a couple of months for me. And then I was getting stuff to feed my habit. And then I was getting stuff for nobody at all. It was just myself. And I ended up in a substantial amount of debt when I finished school. I was in October. I got taken into hospital and, you know, I'd been using drugs every day and I had no really understanding of what I was doing or how much money I owed. But when I got sobered up for the first time, I realised that I had owed 20,000 and I had to go to the credit union and get a credit union loan, and I had to go get a bank loan, and I had to get family loans.
The low point for you, though, marked a turning point as well.
Yeah, so that wasn't enough for me, that trip to the hospital, to help me change. You know, I swore to my ma when she was at the end of the hospital bed crying that I would change and I'd never do it again. But I was an addict and I didn't know I was an addict, and I didn't want to believe I was an addict. So addiction had a hold of me and I never understood. So I thought I could do it all myself. Like, I could do things myself for a lot of the time in life, but this was too much for me. And I kept going and I went back out there and things got progressively worse. I lost a number of jobs. I was in debt 24/7. There was people calling to the door, and, you know, it got too much for me. Then the year after, it was 2019 on Mother's Day, when, you know, I just had enough. I thought about suicide and all that type of stuff before, and I'd wrote suicide letters, and even before I was using, because I've always struggled with the head. It's always been a bit of a problem in my life, but today it's not, thank God. And that day, you know, I was out for 3 days, I hadn't slept, and I just said, look, I don't want to be a part of this anymore. And I went to the Liffey and I tried to take my own life, but by the grace of God, I was saved by a good friend of mine back then. He came back and found me at the side of the water with no clothes on. And, you know, that was the day something came over me and I knew I had to change. It was either keep going on the way it was and die as a 19-year-old who had so much potential, or go on and change my life and potentially change people's lives. And, you know, I changed my life and I am who I am today. And, you know, I'm going to be 3 years clean this July. And, you know, I help hundreds of people day in, day out, week in, week out. And it's all because of the program of recovery I live today. And I couldn't be more grateful for that event that happened in my life, because if that didn't happen, I don't know where I would be today.
Yeah. The ready availability of it, Conor, I mean, you know, they always talk about alcohol. You can go to a supermarket and buy a slab of beer. You can go to a pub on every corner and you can get a drink. I mean, is it the same really with cocaine, that no matter where you go? I mean, you, a stranger in Croatia, you managed to secure cocaine quite easily. Is it the same all around Ireland?
Yeah, look, it's absolutely everywhere you go. And it's the thing with society nowadays. It's hard for the younger generation to get away from it. It's everywhere you go. You can hop onto your phone and it's quicker than ordering a pizza. It's one text message and you can have whatever you want. Regardless of cocaine, it can be any drug. You can get whatever you want nowadays.
All right, Luke Connor, thank you very much for sharing your story with us. And some people listening may benefit hugely from your accounting of your experience, which happily has a very positive ending for you. But do you regard yourself constantly as a recovering addict? I mean, is the battle won?
So for me, it's a daily thing. You know, I wake up every morning and I do a few bits. I do a few parts of the program, and I wake up every morning, and once I do my little part of the program, I know the battle's won. It's just for me today. Today I don't want to use. Today I don't want to drink and do drugs. And I just take it day by day. And if I keep practicing the same principles that I've been practicing for the last 3 years, I know I'm going to be okay. I go to festivals. I go on nights out. I go to pubs. I go to nightclubs. And the thought of drinking drugs doesn't cross my mind anymore, because I live on a spiritual basis of life that suits me as a recovering addict. So yeah, I'm always saying I'm just recovering for today. I'll never be recovered or cured from the disease of addiction. I accept that.
Well, Connor, once again, thank you very much for joining us on the program. If you've been affected by any of the issues raised in our conversation, you can contact the HSE's Drugs and Alcohol Free Phone helpline, 1-800-459-459. And also you can contact Samaritans 24/7 on 116123. Colin O'Gara, Head of Addiction Services at John of God's Hospital and Clinical Professor of Psychiatry at UCD, listening to that conversation. It kind of says it all, how someone who dabbles in cocaine can go downhill, Colin.
Well, absolutely. I thought that was an excellent account of the initiation of the drug, initially where the drug appears to be relatively harmless. That ties in with the normalization. There's a hedonistic piece at the start. And people can feel, very euphoric and feel very good taking it for a relatively short period of time. However, after that, what you see is the emergence of both physical and psychological difficulties. And, what we treat is exactly like Connor's account, people who never intended to run into difficulties taking the drug. So it is true that a large proportion of people taking the drug will have moderate difficulties if they continue to take the drug, but one never knows if there'll be one of those individuals that'll run into severe difficulties. And as Connor outlined, the difficulties that are included with the taking of cocaine are severe mental health difficulties, including suicide, but also physical problems. And people who take cocaine once or twice can end up in accident and emergency departments with, for instance, an arrhythmia, which would be atrial fibrillation, which would be the abnormal beating of the heart, which can lead to more serious arrhythmias, such as ventricular fibrillation, which can lead to cardiac arrest. And we see all the time reports in the media of young people dying as a result of taking cocaine. The other thing, Pat, is stroke, and young people unfortunately shatter blood vessels in their brain because of taking the drug. And unfortunately, neurological clinics and wards, which your listeners would generally associate with older individuals, can have younger people who've suffered this as a result of taking cocaine. So it does, as a parent, it does put the fear of God into me, and I'm sure it puts the fear of God into many of your listeners who are parents. But this is, this is the issue. Connor outlined the availability, and we do have a problem in this country with availability of cocaine. We've always had an issue with alcohol in this country. We continue to have a serious issue with alcohol. But what we now have is the combination of cocaine and alcohol as a difficulty. And, when they combine, they're like combined accelerants. So, I'm significantly concerned about the two of those, and we do need to fund our approach to this properly. We need to pour as much funding into it as possible to get young people away from cocaine.
Is there anything can be done to cut off the supply? I mean, if it's so readily available, it can't be beyond the wit of the guards to actually use those services themselves to detect the sellers of the drug, which of course is an illegal activity. Or are the Garda Force is a young force. Are they typical of their peers? Are they doing cocaine as well?
Well, I think cocaine, you know, all the evidence supports that it affects every sector, and that includes every professional and every, you know, every service out there. Cocaine has affected it. It's multifactorial in my view, Pat. The solution won't be one-stranded, and, you know, certainly, you know, in terms of, you know, legalization, it's not something that I would be in favor of. I think decriminalizing personal use is definitely something I would be in favor of. But also, you know, if you were perfect at stopping cocaine coming into the country from, say, a shipping point of view, in the past 10 years, all of our patients tell us that the internet has changed everything. So, you know, if you blocked one aspect, you'll get it coming through the internet. I really think, you know, what it boils down to is dissuading people from taking drugs. And, you know, when they do take drugs, treating them in a compassionate way, in a health-led way, and persuading young people to do other things. And the only way you do that, in my view, and I think the literature supports it, is by pouring the funding into it and setting up. I mean, at the moment, we do not have, you know, in Dublin, we have very good community, you know, addiction teams, but in the rest of the country, we don't, for instance. So that would be an example. If we set up community addiction teams across the country, that would be a very good start.
All right, Colin, thank you very much for joining us. That's Colin O'Gara, Head of Addiction Services at St. John of God Hospital and Clinical Professor of Psychiatry at UCD.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.